like Sharh Manzuma Sabzawari and Sharh Ashraq. Meanwhile, he attended Kharij lectures by the late Mirza Mehdi Ashtiani and the late Mirza Hashim Qazvini. In the late 1368 Hijri, he migrated to Qum to accomplish his studies in fiqh and usul. His eminence left Qum for Najaf al-Ashraf. On having arrived in Najaf, he began attending Qayatullah Khoi and Sheikh Hussain Hilli's lectures in jurisprudence and the fundamentals of jurisprudence. In 1380 Hijri, Ayatollah Sistani traveled back to his hometown, the holy city of Mashhad, expecting to stay and settle down there. In the same year, he was awarded a permit by Imam Al-Khoi and another by Sheikh Hilli, certifying that he had attained the level of ijtihad, that is, deduction of legal judgment in matters of religion.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, and our dear guest and guest speaker, as always, Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, we are going to talk about some of the laws related to mourning and azadari. Let's shed some light, if you will, on the concept and notion of mourning and azadari for Imam Hussein, would you?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There is no doubt, of course, that the tragedy of Karbala, when ascribed to the killers and to the murderers, is a criminal act. It is a terrible act. But when it is ascribed to Imam Hussein himself and his family, then it is a conscious confrontation on his part, and actually it is a courageous resistance for a sacred goal, a sacred end. And of course, the whole concept revolves around reviving Islam, resuscitating Islam, which was endangered badly by Yazid and his criminal friends and thugs who were with him, of course. As you know, from the viewpoint of history, if we discuss this issue, we know that the entire nation of Islam had failed to stand up to Yazid, and they had to succumb or surrender themselves to Yazid's will. Whatever he wanted, people had to follow him.
Yes.
And obviously, in this particular situation, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam made up his mind to stand up against Yazid in his tyrannical regime. And of course, otherwise it would be the end of Islam. Islam had been endangered badly by Yazid. So Imam Hussein took it upon himself, the responsibility of the whole nation. And of course, the greatest tragedy was that one who stood up for the noblest of causes, the defense of Islam, was cut down in so cruel and remorseless way. He was, of course, on the day of Ashura, he was martyred, his family was captivated, taken captives, and of course, his children were also martyred along with him,
And also tortured on the way.
They were tortured. Of course, the story is horrendous. It is inexplicable.
Yes,
because we find no words to explain the tragedy.
Express the true heartfelt feelings.
Of course.
Yes.
And of course, the story continued. It did not stop there. On the day of Ashura, it continued from that day onward until Zainab, went to Syria, to Damascus, and then came back to Medina. And all the way from Karbala to Syria, and from Syria to, it was a journey of pain and sorrow and grief.
Yes.
So it is actually for this reason that the sacrifice of Imam Hussein is actually commemorated mm-hmm. every day. And we as Shia Muslims have to be proud of having such a school of resistance, of course. We must be honored, we must be proud of being the follower of such a great leader. And we must be proud of following such examples, such noble examples.
Yes.
Such as Imam Hussein and his brother Abu al-Fazl al-Abbas and his children Ali Akbar and Ali Asghar. Okay, so the concept of azadari or the concept of mourning for Imam Hussein, I should say in brief, it's not about weeping, crying, and beating your chest, and of course. Taking into the streets and mm-hmm. chanting, okay,
yes.
Poems. So we must understand and we must come to terms with the concept of Ashura. We must know that the goal of Ashura for which Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam stood up
yes.
is not beating ourselves or shedding tears
yes.
and weeping. We must understand the philosophy, the concept of Ashura, and of course Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam. Just in a letter he wrote to his own brother, he highlighted some of the main goals. He said that...
Let me stop you there to take a short break,
okay.
and we'll be back. Stay tuned to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We'll be back shortly.
Stars, your eyes pull me to you. Who are you? I walk in the day with millions of angels. I see you in all these faces. Who are you?
Back to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the concept and philosophy of azadari and mourning. And you were stating, Sheikh Javid, about the letter in which some of the goals have
yes.
been expressed.
Of course, in a letter to his brother Muhammad Hanafi, I think, of course, Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam mentioned and stated clearly some of the goals. He said that he's not a rebel, first of all,
mm-hmm.
and he's not rising up against Yazid for fame, to gain reputation. Of course, he was standing up against Yazid for justice in order to revive Islam. And of course, justice was the main goal for which Imam Hussein, of course, stood up.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went to Mecca. He left Medina for Mecca. And of course, he did not complete his pilgrimage
mm-hmm.
of the house of God. He left Mecca before completing the Hajj rituals. And he went to Karbala. Of course, his intention was to go to Kufa because a lot of people who were supposedly his supporters, of course, he went to Kufa because he was promised allegiance
mm-hmm.
by those people in Kufa.
Yes.
But unfortunately, on his
they
way to Kufa,
promise.
Yeah. Unfortunately, those people broke with their promises, and also he was stopped before reaching, and of course before reaching Kufa,
mm.
He was stopped at a point where it was called, for example, Karbala or Of course, the older name, I suppose, was Nineveh, I suppose.
Sheikh Javid, we all know that being dressed in black is kind of reprehensible, usually, of in Islam, according to the laws, right? But is it reprehensible or makruh to wear black during Muharram and Safar?
Of course not, because according to all religious authorities, wearing black is even recommended because it reminds us of the tragedy of Karbala, and it is not only not reprehensible, but even it is recommended because of the fact that it reminds us of the tragedy of Karbala. And in order for us to show that we sympathize with the family of the Prophet and the family of Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam and his family members, of course, we show black and we sympathize. We wear black and we sympathize with them. There's no objection in wearing black.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Once again, I use this opportunity to express our heartfelt condolences to our dear audiences, and may God accept all of our mourning and azadari for Imam Hussein and their pure household. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every breath that you did take, every step that you would make, purpose and guidance it gave mankind's heart it reawaked. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein planned to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Many people did leave the first teachings received. Hussein plan to retrieve loss of faith he perceived. Guide, you would be in place of Rasul to restore the sacred ring. Light, you would radiate in the dark and continue the message. When you passed through arid sand, met foreigners of new lands.
The light.
An architectural firm in Singapore has come up with a unique idea to deal with the country's constant warm temperatures. A hotel on the island's busy business district has been covered with more than 20 species of plants to keep the place cooler. A layer of vegetation blankets the facade of the Red Tower, which is growing thicker with the passage of time. The plants reduce the ambient temperature by a combination of water evaporation and releasing cooler vapor. The architect says the tower is 10 to 20 degrees Celsius cooler than nearby buildings. The green facades also reduce harmful carbon emissions, which account for over 20% in the sprawling city. The world's highest expressway has opened to traffic in China's Tibet Autonomous Region. It's nearly 300 kilometers long and has an average elevation of 4,500 meters. It connects the cities of Nanchu and Lhasa, shortening the travel time from 6 to 3 hours. The road passes through many picturesque areas such as snowy mountains, grasslands and wetlands. The expressway is also environmentally friendly. Special passages have also been devised for animals to get from one side of the freeway to the other.
The youngest panda at the U.S.'s Smithsonian Zoo, National Zoo that is, has turned one. Baby panda Xiao Qiji celebrates the milestone by eating a specially made fruitsicle cake with his mother, Mei Xiang, in Washington, D.C. Both pandas dug into their icy cave to night the old treat in the hot and humid summers of the U.S. capital. Zhao has captured hearts and had many first-time experiences. Some of them include sliding and tumbling around in snow and recognizing his name, which translates to little miracle in English.
He was born during the pandemic, and given the age of his mother, we didn't think she'd have another cub. And the fact that we, not just that we had this miracle, but he has just been, he's given people moments of pure joy and pure happiness.
Zhao Qiji is a fourth surviving cub of Mei Xiang. Its older siblings now live in China under an agreement with the United States. Pandas have been reclassified from endangered to vulnerable thanks to reforestation to expand habitats in which the species can survive. There are an estimated 1,800 giant pandas in the wild.
The annual butter sculpture has been unveiled at the New York State Fair to the delight of eager spectators. The artwork was sponsored for the 53rd year by the American Dairy Association. It was carved out of 400 kilograms of butter and took 10 days to build. The sculpture is dedicated to the children who will be going back to their normal lives after the coronavirus pandemic is over. Once the fair ends, all of the butter will be broken down and turned into renewable energy. Switzerland is constructing its biggest alpine solar plant in an effort to secure renewable energy throughout the year. The 2.2 megawatt plant is expected to be completed by the end of 2021. The Mutzi site will include nearly 5,000 solar modules and produce around 3.3 million kilowatt hours of electricity. It will have the option of delivering half of its production during the winter when temperatures drop to sub-zero levels in Switzerland. The developers say the project makes more environmental than fiscal sense. Currently, the country gets less than 4% of its electricity from solar power. An eatery in Japan is giving disabled people a new lease on life by including them in its workforce. Dawn Cafe uses robotic staff controlled remotely by people who are handicapped. Around 50 people with mental and physical disabilities help run the cafe. The pilots come from all over Japan as well as overseas. The venue was established with support from major companies and crowdfunding. It has become more than just a place to eat for its customers.
Customers here are not exactly coming to this location just to meet the Orihime robots. They come here because of the people behind Orihime, and they will come back to see them again.
For Kentaro, Dawn Cafe has a very personal touch. In his childhood, he was left unable to go to school due to a period of bad health. Now he aspires to come up with ways to further the inclusion of disabled people in society. Crowds of visitors and conservationists have been delighted by the birth of a rare orangutan in the Spanish town of Fuengirola. The new residents of the safari park made its first public appearance 2 weeks after its birth. The baby, yet to be named, is the only one to be born in a European zoo over the past 12 months. The park has launched a program to conserve Bornean orangutans that are considered as a critically endangered species. Their population has declined by more than 50% over the past century. Dozens of baby turtles have made their way to the sea after an unexpected overnight hatch in Italy. Italian volunteers were surprised by track marks of the hatchlings from an unknown nest in Sicily. Some of the eggs hatched in the morning. An environmental group following the turtles' movement said that 74 hatchlings made it to the sea, while 5 didn't. The reptiles are an endangered species of oceanic turtle that also live in the Mediterranean Sea. Their population has declined in recent years due to hunting, loss of beach nesting sites, over-harvesting of their eggs, and being caught in fishing gear.
A Slovenian enthusiast has discovered a new cave in the Alpine country, which is staggering visitors by its awe-inspiring looks. Ludvik Husu, a 63-year-old cave explorer, has come across a cavern that runs 60 meters deep in the ground. It's located in the country's karst region, an area of land made up of limestone. Some 14,000 caves are buried under the green forest of Slovenia, hiding away breathtaking stalactite and stalagmite formations. The limestone region is so pristine and uncharted that the European Space Agency has used the caves to train astronauts.
Yeah, astronauts
also know that the karst world is exceptional, special in a similar way to how a space environment can be. It is an unknown environment where you do not know what to expect at your next step. They have been here to train for precisely that, how to help yourself in a dark area where you're not sure what's going on and everything is new. That's very good training for space, and they have been very pleased to be able to prepare for something they might find in space.
Over 150 species, some looking like alien creatures, have been discovered inside the cave systems. They include an ancient aquatic salamander called the Little Dragon that can live up to 100 years. The animal was previously considered living proof that dragons had once existed. Some cave systems in Slovenia stretch for tens of kilometers. They are so winding and deep that scientists say large parts of them remain undiscovered despite exploration efforts dating back hundreds of years.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
As the U.S. is experiencing its worst heat wave, Boston zookeepers are working extra hard to keep the animals cool to avoid overheating. Some get frozen treats, and some, like the yak, get a water hosing several times a day when the temperatures rise. The hardest part is cooling down animals belonging to cold climates, like the reindeer. Since reindeer don't like water, the hosing down is a big no. Instead, the poor animals sit in front of a desk fan all day to stay away from the heat. The birds have it a little easier as they spend most of their time in air-conditioned dens.
In Indonesia, a group of university lecturers have come up with an idea of building a robot to help people during the coronavirus pandemic. The robot is assembled from electric household items like pots and pans and an old television monitor. It was named Delta after the new coronavirus variant ripped through Indonesia. The robot was initially built to entertain residents of a village in a country's East Java province. But the head of the robot-making project says he decided to shift his function into assisting people dealing with a deadly virus.
With this new Delta variant and the surging number of COVID-19 cases, I decided to turn the robot used for public services into one that sprays disinfectant and delivers food and necessities of residents who are self-isolating. I'm shifting the function to serve only the members of the community who are in need.
The interesting thing about a robot is that it greets people when delivering things to isolated residents. The developers of the robot say it has been built in a joint project with local people and is by no means a high-tech device.
don't know much about woolly mammoths that went extinct some 10,000 years ago, except their scant references in archaeology books. Now scientists have discovered that the giant mammals could walk incredibly long distance. Scientists from the University of Alaska have concluded that a male mammoth named Kik covered enough ground in its 28-year lifespan to encircle the Earth twice. To come up with the data, paleontologists analyzed one of Kik's well-preserved tusks. They say the animal lived with a herd through its infancy and youth, and then went on to live alone. Scientists hope they will learn more about mammoths by analyzing further data from Kik's remains.
Prehistoric cave paintings found in Spain proved that Neanderthals were the first artists on Earth. A new study says red markings discovered in three caves near Malaga did not occur naturally. They were made by Neanderthals nearly 65,000 years ago. That's when modern humans did not inhabit the continent yet. The findings suggest that the pigments were applied at different times, sometimes more than 10,000 years apart. This shows that Neanderthals returned to the site over time to make symbolic markings.
I believe that this art made by the Neanderthals will be also found in other caves around the world. This time figurative art, which we have not paid attention to, may be precisely the oldest art in the world. So this place in Spain is one of the caves with the oldest art in the world.
Researchers say the pigments are yet another evidence that the intellectual capabilities of Neanderthals have been underestimated. Neanderthals went extinct about 40,000 years ago.
Egypt's forgotten art of Batik is undergoing a revival thanks to a designer who has been working hard to bring the ancient cloth decorating technique to life. Working tirelessly in a small workshop in Old Cairo, Samer Hassanyan has enhanced the art of batik over the years. Samer is one of the few designers in Egypt to use the traditional method to design on fabrics. The art consists of patterns created by applying melted wax onto cloth before dipping it in dye or painting over it with a brush. The fabric is put into boiling water in order to melt the wax. The ancient Egyptians used the batik fabric mostly to wrap the coffins and mummies. However, the difficulty of mastering the art caused its disappearance.
Batik has disappeared in Egypt because no one shared their skill. As a teacher, I find that it is very important to provide as much training as I can because people realize how difficult it is when they start learning the techniques.
Samer has now a skillful artist in her workshop who designed colorful fabric using the technique. Samer says her goal is to produce unique designs that are particularly identified as to Egyptian and represent the country's rich cultural heritage.
Artisans in an Egyptian village work hard to keep alive the ancient tradition of making papyrus paper despite a tourist downturn amid the coronavirus pandemic. The village of Karamus in northeastern Cairo is the largest hub of papyrus production in the country. Many of the residents of the village are involved in farming, processing, and decorating papyrus planted in 25 farms near the village. The Pharaonic era tradition includes cutting strips from the plant, pressing them together, and drying them to form a sheet. The artists then decorate the papyrus to create beautiful products for tourists. However, the industry has been affected by the coronavirus pandemic, forcing the artists to use more creativity.
We are trying to think out of the box to keep this profession alive. We made products out of papyrus paper, like wallets, notebooks, drawing sketches, new products, so we can keep going.
The artists have also launched online stores to sell their new products. Papyrus producers say they have lost nearly 80% of their income in the last 2 years. However, they say they will never stop making papyrus and will make every effort to keep the ancient cultural tradition alive.
When we go through this book, we find that Mr. Azizullah Tarudi is trying to collect every sentence quoted regarding Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam or from Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the books.
For example, if you want to read something about Imam Hussein, you don't know where to find it, which book you can find the information you are looking for. But Musnad stands for compiling everything which is related to Imam Hussein.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in The Teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher you are listening to. Please accept our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the month of Muharram. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahtavi and Sheikh Ziainia. Sheikh Mahtavi, assalamu alaikum, welcome to your show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziainia, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Let me express my condolences on the occasion of martyrdom of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam and his great companions.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about an author who dedicated one of his most outstanding works to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. He is no one but the late Azizullah Attarudi, and his magnum opus or work, Musnad al-Imam al-Shahid Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Sheikh Ziainia, let's start with you for this episode. What information can you give us about Musnad al-Imam al-Shahid Abu Abdullah al-Hussein?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. If I want to give a briefing of the content of the book, I should mention that this book is consisting of three volumes. So the first volume is starting with the narrations regarding the birth of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam, the beginning moment of the life of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam, and then it moves to his names, his titles, and his virtues, and his imamate, and it goes forward some narrations regarding photos, regarding the bravery of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein alayhi salam in battlefields, and his attributes, his personal life. Then after this, Mr. Azizullah Attarudi is emphasizing of this issue that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is not an ordinary figure. So he says that, for example, the chapter 19, for example, he quotes this riwayat that anna rasul yasqal Hussein alayhi salam. The Holy Prophet is the one who was giving water to Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam. You know, he is wisely is trying to give us this image that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is a special figure, that the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam was looking at him in a very, very special way.
That's all right.
Giving him a special position.
That's right.
But this great figure that the Holy Prophet was giving water to him was neglected by Muslim society just 50 years after the demise of the Holy Prophet.
That's all right. So this is, as you said, this book consists, and this Musnad consists of three volumes. Number one is his general background.
Yes.
As I have it over here, the second one is Ahadith al-Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on different topics. It could be Akhlaq, Ahkam one. And the third one is a collection of the narrators of these Ahadith of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Also, there is an epilogue or the ending to that, which is talking about some of the poets who composed some poems regarding Sayyid al-Shuhada. Sheikh Mahtavi, this book, and other musnads, I think I've heard that Azizullah Attarudi have also musnads about the other imams. What do you think the importance of writing this musnad type of thing for imams is, especially for Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam? What is the significance?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Okay, before I mention what you asked for, brother, let me just tell Azizullah Attarudi, may Allah bless him, is one who did kind of musnad, as my brother mentioned, for all of the Ahlul Bayt. We may say something that he wrote a kind of musnad, compiled the riwayat of Ahlul Bayt in the book which is called Musnad. But when it comes to details, we see, for example, for Imam Ali, it's a kind of huge book, 25 volumes.
Wow.
He wrote only for Imam Ali. Then, for example, for Imam Hussein, as you mentioned, 3 volumes.
That's right.
Imam Sajjad, 2 volumes. Imam Baqir, 6 volumes. Again, Imam Sadiq, 22 volumes.
Wow.
These ulama that you are reading their books, if you put their works top of each other, you cannot jump over their works. So just imagine, it is mentioned, for example, for late Attarudi, that he published more than 100 books.
That's right.
So under 50 titles.
That's right.
So that is a huge contribution that he did for Islamic library. That is very important point that we have to take into consideration. But with respect to the question that you said, what is the significance of Musnad, it is really important for a researcher. For example, if you want to read something about Imam Hussein, you don't know where to find it, which book you can find the information you are looking for. But Musnad stands for compiling everything which is related to the life of Imam Hussein, the sayings of Imam Hussein, the companions of Imam Hussein, everything which is related with a slight relationship to Imam Hussein is compiled in the Musnad book.
This is like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, I wanted to say it, it's a kind of encyclopedia. So it's really easy. Through the alphabetic name you can find it, but you have to follow the order of the book. As my brother mentioned, the information in these three books could be classified in three chapters that you also mentioned. The first chapter is dedicated to merits, names and things of I mean the titles of Imam Hussein. The second volume is with respect to the sayings of Imam Hussein.
I don't fear if from your cradle you depart. You sleep in the deepest oceans of my heart. But if for only a second from
and especially about the case of Imam al-Hussein is that in this musnad and these authentic resources related to the statements of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, when he left Mecca and Medina for Karbala, all these documents and the sayings and statements of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam show that how much he was after correcting the Muslim Ummah. I mean, you know, just, you know, we have different documents. He started by saying some words by the shrine of Prophet Muhammad, then Omar al-Atraf, his stepbrother, then Umm Salama, you know, and all the people that come here and there, these stations that Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam stays on the way to Karbala and give the lectures and the sermons that he gave the night before among the companions. You are free to go, whoever is ready to go is permitted to go and leave me and this and that. You know, the special case about Musnad and writing Musnad about Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam is that It gives Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam qiyam and movement a kind of authenticity and shows that how Imam, through his words and actions both, was after correcting the Islamic Ummah. This, I think, Mr. Attaruddin's book, that is Mustad Imam al-Shahid, helped us very much in this regard. Sheikh Zia, any other remarks regarding this book?
To complete your nice points, I should say that this kind of musnad is somehow an stream that if we go through in it and go with it, we will start from the point of the birth of Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam to the martyrdom of His Holiness and also the events that happened after his martyrdom, right, and also the fadila and thawab of ziyarat of Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam, and even how to do ziyarat for him.
That's right.
And many other different issues that in a sentence, anything that is related to Abu Abdullah Hussein alayhi salam.
May Allah give us the chance of visiting the shrine of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam in the city of Karbala during the month of Muharram, and being present in the majalis of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, inshallah. This is really a good chance. During the pandemic, the COVID pandemic, unfortunately, most of the visitors to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam are banned from going there, or they have to observe the protocols. But the case is that I think even from far, far away, you can pay visit and homage to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And the case is that scholars like Azizullah Attaruddi help us to give us a picture of what happened to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam through, I say, the literary heritage of the Aimmas. And unfortunately, the best of the people of Allah on the earth were killed and martyred by the worst people on earth. And this is really a tragedy for us.
I also would like to tell that our dear listeners have access to this book through the internet. They can find the book, the digital copy of the book, in Nur Live and also liveishi.io.
That's all very good. This book is written in Arabic language.
And also translated in Farsi.
In Farsi language, that's right. But Nur Live, as you said, is a big, big digital library. Most of the references, the Shia ones, are available online through software or the PDF format. That's great. Thank you very much for the information. It was very kind of Sheikh Mahdavi. May Allah help us to be among the faithful followers of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam's teachings and his trainings. And may Allah bless the soul of the late Azizullah Attaruddi. Thank you very much, Sheikh Zia Inia.
You're welcome. Thank you
for your presence in the program, the teacher, and Sheikh Mahdavi. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to us. Please accept again our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and the month of Muharram. Do not forget us in your du'as and supplications and azadaris in the majalis and the takaya that you go during these days in the month of Muharram. You can visit our website for more information on this program and our previous episodes and download them for free at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode and another dignitary and famous personality of Shia world, God bless you all. Fi amanullah. Assalamu alaikum ya Abu Abdullah.
Standing all alone,
standing all alone
in Karbala, she sees burning tents,
sees burning tents,
and remembers Zahra. She remembers Zahra. Blaze, alone here I stand, no one left to embrace. Both my feet are being burned by the sand, and fire scorches my face.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام إذا أضرت النوافل بالفرائض فارفضوها.
Imam Ali said, when optional issues, the nawafil, stand in the way of the wajib, the fara'id, then abandon the nawafil. Welcome back, dear friends. It's a blessing to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio, the programs to my brother, and we were discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. One of the beautiful lessons, dear friends, which we learn from the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, is the concept of justice, and that too, justice for all. Now, we live in a day and age, as you all know, where justice seems to become justice for a few and injustice for a great many. And that justice for a few is also injustice in reality. So let me explain a little bit. The justice for the few means that the court systems and the laws, they apply to very few people in their true sense, and these laws can be broken, which is injustice in this justice. And for the vast majority of people, the laws are there, you know, and this injustice happens because no matter what they do, even if it's a mistake, they end up getting in trouble. Even if it was involuntary, they end up getting in trouble. But if somebody has power, if somebody has position, they can get away with murder. But if somebody is poor, disenfranchised, or even the common people, they can't even get away with crossing the road and jaywalking. Now, one of the things which we find with Imam Ali alayhi salam, and we find in the historical texts and the books of tradition, is that no common man was made disappointed by Imam Ali's justice. Meaning that person would not think that because I am a commoner, because I have no power, I will be deprived of justice. In today's day and age, when the common man, the average man, the average Joe, if you will, because they have no power, they don't have authority, they don't have wealth, they don't have position, they don't have status, they are not given the justice which should be given to them. They are, a matter of fact, deprived of justice. But when we go ahead and we look a little bit further, we find that those people who have wealth and status and position, they get away with everything. Nobody even bothers to say that these people are breaking the law. Oh, the law doesn't apply to these guys. They're too rich and famous for the law to apply to them. But this poor person, this common person, this person who is a middle class or lower class or is working hard in his life, you better not break any laws, not a single one, or we will fine you and throw you in jail. Imam Ali alayhi salam's justice was so perfect that whether you were a common person, middle class or low class, or if you were incredibly wealthy, upper class, justice was always justice. A profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
I IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
You for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil. Ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, "Oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger." Protection on the day when the guilty shall be recognized by their marks, so they shall be seized by the forelocks and the feet. For protection on the day when a father shall not give any satisfaction for his son, nor shall the child give any satisfaction for his father. Surely the promise of Allah is true.
Now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
I just would like to share with you one sentiment or the feeling of a lady who was among the followers of Ahlul Bayt. And this is a lady who is known as Sauda bint Ammara bin al-Ashtar al-Hamdaniya. And she was from the family which believed in Amir al-Mu'mineen, from the Hamdaniya Yemeni family and the tribe. And she was a poetess in her own right. She was talented in composing poetry. Very, very powerful words where she says, صَلَّى الْإِلَهَ عَلَىٰ رُوحٍ فَضَمَّنُهُ قَبْرٌ فَأَصْبَحَ فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. May Allah shower His salawat and blessings on this soul, تَضَمَّنُهُ قَبْرٌ, when the grave took him in, فَعَصْبَهَا فِيهِ الْعَدْلُ مَدْفُونَ. It was not Ali who was buried in there, it was Adl which was buried with him.